And welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm here with the Azure Mobile Services guys. I'm here with Paul Badham and Josh Twist. Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks,
my pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm excited to talk to you about mobile services. It's a new offering. There's a lot we offer to developers. But before we get started, let's start with you, Josh. Who are you?
I am a program manager on the mobile services team. I've been on this team since the beginning, so about 11 months, something like that. I look after some of the client work. I do a bunch of stuff in helping get mobile services out the door, basically.
Nice. Paul, tell us who you are.
Yeah, so I'm a program manager working on the same team as Josh. I've been working on mobile services for about 9 months, so slightly less than Josh. We work together like daily. For me, my areas, a lot of the actual engineering in terms of how we get people's code to the right place so that we can run it and set people's mobile services up, and also particularly the scripts, the programming model that you use to write your own business logic. That's an area that I own in particular.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about Project Zumo, right? I was expecting for it to come out, you know, next year. All of a sudden, here's Scott Guthrie talking about mobile services. Unbelievable. Let's see, Paul, summarize what mobile services is. Let's pretend we're in an elevator. We're going up to the second floor. We're on the first floor.
Mobile services is really about making it easy to build, you know, applications, particularly for like mobile devices or any type of connected client application, by taking out all the work on the back end. We do the work on the back end for you. You get to focus on building the great client experience in your application, and we handle all the work on the server side for you.
And the problem that you're solving is, if I ever wanted an Azure database in the past, let's say before mobile services, that meant a database and a server where I'm going to deploy my website and be able to interact with my database. Mobile services solves the problem, right?
Absolutely. I mean, but you probably want to look at it the other way. Like, you've got some sort of problem in that you want to store data in the cloud. You want to integrate with various authentication services. You want to send push notifications. These are things that you want to do to make a great app. And Azure can provide all this functionality. We just glue it all together for you and make it easy by handling the deployment and that sort of thing. So,
yeah. Josh, how'd Paul do?
He did pretty good, actually. Very good. Very impressed. Yeah, yeah. Bang on message.
Stunning. Okay, so I have mobile services, but it's not just access to databases. Let's go through what a developer gets from mobile services. What's the suite? Josh, tell me.
Yeah, right now we have three kind of core pillars of capability, but we're going to add to those very quickly. So right now we make it easy to add authentication to your app, so your service in the sky is aware of the user that's actually using the system, right? We add structured storage thanks to SQL Server, and we add the ability to run secure code on the server, but in a way that's super easy. You know, you don't suddenly own a project. You don't own a deployment schedule. We just give you the ability to write these scripts that execute on the server. And with that, you can do all kinds of cool things, like add validation, authorization logic, and, as Paul mentioned earlier, even send push notifications. You know, all of the client platforms we target right now have this system of being able to send a push notification, even when someone isn't using the app. And with mobile services, that's like a line of code now. So we've really made that very easy.
The implementation of push notifications is pretty simple to start with. With mobile services, it's a no-brainer now.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's step through this for a second, so you can explain it. I want to make sure I get them. So the first one is authentication. How does mobile services help a developer building a Windows 8 app with authentication?
So with our Windows 8 release, so the public preview of mobile services, we support Windows 8. We're going to add more clients. We'll probably talk about those in a minute. We have really tight integration with Windows Live. So you probably know that Windows 8 has baked in support for Microsoft Account, formerly known as Windows Live Identities. And so we've really built on that. So you use the Live SDK. You install the Live SDK onto your development machine, and then it's basically a line of code. Once you've logged the user in with his Microsoft account, it's a line of code to associate that user with the mobile service. You just call login, and then at that point, whenever that user does something with the server, the script, the stuff that Paul mentioned before he'd worked on the programming model for, the script is aware of who that user is, and so it can make smart decisions about, I know about this user's devices, right? So I know how to send a push notification to him, or maybe to his friends, or I know that this user isn't allowed to see that data he's trying to get to. Like, he can only see his friends' check-ins, for example. And so that's really where authentication lights up and authorization. I should add quickly as well that we're going to add more authentication providers very shortly.
More than just Windows Live, you mean?
So more than just Microsoft account, right? Right.
Stuff like, I don't know,
Facebook
maybe.
And Twitter and Google and, you know, and dot, dot. We'll add more and more as time goes forward.
Got it. And is it a transparent experience for the user then? Is it just like going and getting my Microsoft account that I've already logged into, or do I log in again, or how does it work?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's very transparent when you're doing it on Windows 8 because of the sort of the zero sign-in process you get where, you know, Windows 8 already knows what your Microsoft account is.
Yeah.
You've already sort of associated that in the background. So you pretty much just log in instantly. You don't even get, you know, sort of prompted for the login if you've got it set up properly. The other way it can work is once you're looking at supporting lots of different providers, I think people are used to sort of seeing this experience they see in apps where some sort of view pops up with a bunch of the different providers and you kind of get picked.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So that's where we're looking at going because that's the type of experience people are used to getting when they run, you know, once they have the option of logging in with various different authentication.
And Paul, it seems like there's a subtext in mobile services of everything developers have to do to write an app anyway, we're just going to make it here in this SDK so it's really easy,
yep.
Right? Because it seems like this whole suite is just all these repetitive things that developers are having to do.
I mean, if you look at apps out there, right, like there are so many things that are just repeated over and over and over in every single app. And there's a lot of time we can save.
And not always done right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so this helps them to use something to make sure that they can trust its implementation and it handles all the variations as well. Probably multilingual when it's released as well.
Yeah, so that's something that at the moment, because we're really just in preview, we're just focusing really, you know, right now on building out features and that sort of thing. But localization and that sort of thing is all sort of part and parcel for us once we actually go to do, you know, an official release, like a final GA.
Yeah, so I'm running server code now. Help me understand this. I'm not writing C#, right?
No, we chose JavaScript as the server-side programming language. And the motivation behind that is really that JavaScript is the broadest language in terms of, in that pretty much everybody now is at the point where they've had to do some JavaScript at some point. If you had to pick one language for all developers to use, regardless of what client they're developing for, whether or not, sure, a Windows 8 developer may know C# better than JavaScript, maybe. But you know, when you look at other platforms, once you start looking at Android and iOS and everything like that, I think JavaScript makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Across all those platforms, JavaScript is the most universal language.
Yeah. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. I think it makes plenty of sense. You can't
We should say we haven't ruled out looking at C# support on the server. So if you're... Listeners have feedback, send it in, you know, vote with their feet on what features they'd like to see.
I mean, this is something that we've already heard on the forums a bit. Quite a few people are like, hey, I want to write in scripts in C#. Certainly for the moment, the risk is that, you know, the more, if we went really early and tried to support lots of different languages and that on the server, that's a lot more surface area. Every time we add a feature, we have to add it lots of different places and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah. So. It's harder to boil the ocean than people think.
Yeah, no, it is pretty tricky.
All right, Paul, if I'm running code on the server, what are some of the things that code can, why would I even do that in the first place? What are some reasons I would have code on the server?
Really common ones are things like you want to implement validation rules or authorization, so in rules about which user can see what data and that sort of thing. You really want to implement that on the server, right? Implementing it on the client makes it very easy to circumvent. So, I mean, there's heaps of other things, though, like anything that falls under the umbrella of business logic, you know, what does your app, you know, actually do? Does it go and talk to other services? There's some sort of mashup, right, where it needs to get information from other things. You probably want to do that. You may do that on the client. You may do it on the server, too.
So, how, How much of the JavaScript engine is at my disposal, and can I almost do anything?
So that's a great question. We run on Node.js, so your script is running as a basically JavaScript that's running in mm-hmm. JS, which means that a lot of the built-in functionality that Node.js provides is available to you.
Yeah.
So things like working with different data types and buffers and crypto, like they have a bunch of crypto APIs, so if you have to go and create some such
a lot of stuff is the answer, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Right now, there are some things that, because of the way we run your code, don't necessarily make sense. So if you try to spin up an HTTP server, that's really easy to do in Node.js, and you just use a random port.
Yeah.
It's not actually going to work, right? Like, the way we run your code, that port is never actually going to get exposed. And so there are certain things that we basically hide from the API because we just know people will go down a path where they're just going to be a bit confused. Like they're going to be trying to do things and they don't quite work right. So
Josh, where does it show up? I've got code on the server and it shows up for like insert statements and interaction with my database. What are some other things?
Yeah, so, well, right now, that's the focus. So in our first release where we do a lot of CRUD stuff, a lot of data operations, and that's where you get to inject script. So you can think of it as a pipeline. There's the pre-scripting stage where we take care of all the authentication stuff and all that boring goo, and then we get into your scripts. And so your scripts can intercept inserts, updates, deletes, and reads. So one cool thing you can do is as someone tries to read data, you can augment the query and say, add a work clause to that says he can only see his friend's stuff. And then it hits the storage layer, right? So you can redirect what's going to happen. You can say, yep, I'm going to let this go through, or I'm going to cancel it, or I'm going to do something else instead, or I'm going to do something in addition. But that's where the focus is now. Now, what we have coming up in the future is the ability to write scripts in other ways. So you can imagine that everything you want to do from your mobile device isn't necessarily a data operation. Maybe I just want to call the server, get it to go and do some, call Twitter, call Bing image search, who knows what crazy stuff you want to get up to. And so we'll add service operations that support that. And another common thing we think app developers need that we're looking at adding is the ability to just run a script on a scheduled basis. I want to clean up old check-ins every night, or I want to poll Twitter and see if any of my users have had direct messages so I can send them a push notification, that kind of scenario. So we're going to add a cron and schedule capability that allows you to write scripts, pretty much covering the capability to build an API and not just persistence as a service, as we've heard someone say. To build an API for your mobile device, but make it, like, in minutes is a phrase we use all the time. New mobile service, type a bit of script, deploy, press save, and that thing deploys in seconds, actually. It's live, you've got your API, and you can control that in a really fine-grained way as well.